chests whose deep curves filled the enormous shells of their cuirasses. These were the ancestors. There were no portraits of their descendants, and a wide gap existed in the series of the faces of this race. Only one painting served as a link to connect the past and present. A crafty, mysterious head, with gaunt and haggard features. Cheekbones punctuated with a dash of paint, the hair thickly spread with pearls, a painted neck rising stiffly from the fluted ruff. In this representation of one of the most intimate friends of the Duc d'Erpenon and the Marquis d'Eau, the ravages of a sluggish and impoverished constitution were already noticeable. It was obvious that the decadence of this family had followed an unvarying course. The effeminacy of the males had continued with greater pace. As if to conclude the work of long years, the Des Essantes had intermarried for 2 centuries, using up, in such inbred unions, such strength as remained. There was only one living scion of this family, which had once been so numerous that it had occupied all the territories of the Île-de-France and La Brie. The Duc Jean was a slender, nervous young man of 30, with hollow cheeks, cold steel-blue eyes, a straight thin nose, and delicate hands. By a singular atavistic reversion, the last descendant resembled the old grandsire from whom he had inherited the pointed, remarkably fair beard and an ambiguous expression, at once weary and cunning. His childhood had been an unhappy one. Menaced by scrofula and afflicted with relentless fevers, he yet succeeded in crossing the rough waters of adolescence, thanks to fresh air and careful attention. He grew stronger, overcame the languors of chlorosis, and reached his full development. His mother, a tall, pale, taciturn woman, died of anemia, and his father of some uncertain malady. Des Essantes was then 17 years of age. He retained but a vague memory of his parents, and felt neither affection nor gratitude for them. He hardly knew his father, who usually resided in Paris. He recalled his mother, as she lay motionless in a dim room of the Château de l'Orps. The husband and wife would meet on rare occasions, and he remembered those lifeless interviews, when his parents sat face to face in front of a round table faintly lit by a lamp with a wide, low-hanging shade, for the Duchesse could not endure light or sound without being seized with a fit of nervousness. A few halting words would be exchanged between them in the gloom, and then the indifferent Duc would depart to meet the first train back to Paris. Jean's life at the Jesuit school where he was sent to study was more pleasant. At first the fathers pampered the lad, whose intelligence astonished them, but despite their efforts they could not induce him to concentrate on studies requiring discipline. He nibbled at various books and was precociously brilliant in Latin. On the contrary, he was absolutely incapable of construing 2 Greek words, showed no aptitude for living languages, and promptly proved himself a dunce when obliged to master the elements of the sciences. His family gave him little heed. Sometimes his father visited him at school. "How are you? Be good. Study hard." And he was gone. The lad passed the summer vacations at the Château de l'Orps, but his presence could not seduce his mother from her reveries. She scarcely noticed him. When she did, her gaze would rest on him for a moment with a sad smile. And that was all. The moment after she would again become absorbed in the artificial night with which the heavily curtained windows enshrouded the room. The servants were old and dull. Left to himself, the boy delved into books on rainy days and roamed about the countryside on pleasant afternoons.